This is another episode of Matrix Assassins. I am one of your hosts. You can call me V-Lo.
And I'm Nicole.
And thank you for tuning in. Just by pressing play, you've already hacked the Matrix. You guys, this episode was with Andrew from Gemba Red. And we touched on it a little bit, but Nicole and I kind of reverse engineered this episode. And this is my appreciation post for Nicole because when it comes to red light therapy, when you start to research all of the different types of devices, all of the different types of companies, it is truly hard to navigate that realm and to understand what you're looking for and to navigate kind of, I don't want to say the scams, but some of the marketing tactics that you're dealing with when it comes to red light therapy. So that's why you get your friend like Nicole, because she is so thorough and research-based. And I feel like this podcast is a window to our friendship. And I'm so happy that people that listen to this podcast get to benefit from our relationship. And all of us are friends with you. And so they get to reap the benefits. And so if you're somebody like me and you don't even know where to start, you can try to clone Nicole and keep her for yourself, or you can just listen to this episode because that's how we found Andrew from Gemba Red. Nicole, I'll hand this over to you and you can kind of touch on the episode.
Yeah, definitely. So I found him through Matt Blackburn, and I was starting to look into the market to kind of see different red light therapy devices. And of course, if anyone's ever looked, there's so many now. In the past, there weren't as many, but now there's like over 12 different companies. And it's just a lot to take in, especially when you don't know as much about it at first. There's like all these different wavelengths, all different sizes, shapes, weights, just everything. And so I think what really stood out about Andrew was how transparent he is and how knowledgeable he is. He's very front-facing as a founder. Like, he's out there, he's doing his own testing, his own YouTube videos. Like, he's very just upfront about things. Like, it's not about the marketing, it's more about wanting to give a reach out to other people to actually help them. And I think, like, when you're trying to use discernment and you're trying to look at products, that really shines through. And for me, that's always really important. So that was the main reason why I really just like decided to go with this company over some of the others that might be a little bit more flashy or have, you know, like different settings that, you know, maybe his products don't have. But at the end of the day, you know that you're definitely getting the quality and you're getting something that's really been tested and researched well.
For sure. And before we drop this episode, you can head over to www.matrixassassins.com. You can purchase some of our merchandise there, get yourself a tank, get yourself a cozy sweater. Also, you can follow us on at Matrix Assassins on Instagram. Say what's up to us over there. We really try to make it a point to foster our community. And so if you guys have any feedback for our episodes or just want to say hi, make sure to send us a DM. Another way that you can support us is you can like, subscribe, and leave a 5-star review.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I'm like blanking out.
Earth to Nicole.
I think I'm like, the red light is
Are
like,
you mesmerized by the
yeah,
red light?
Yeah, I think it's like hypnotizing me. It's like putting me into a meditative state. All right. This episode is brought to you by Blue Shield. Blue Shield is a forerunner in EMF technology. It has a variety of different devices. You can get devices that cover your entire house or office. You can get a device for when you're on the go, just for your car alone, if you're driving a lot, or even portable devices to take with you when you're out, you know, running errands and going, you know, to store to store. If you're interested in learning more, you can check out my highlights on my account at Matrix Assassin Nicole or on the Matrix Assassin's main account. And if you go to our website, www.matrixassassins.com, and over to the sponsors tab, you'll see the link there. And if you put in Matrix at checkout, you'll get 10% off.
Oh, and one last thing. Andrew gave us a code for Gemba Red. So if you feel called to purchase a device, you can use the code Matrix for 10% off. And with that said, Nicole, are you ready to exit the simulation?
I am.
Let's go.
We have temperatures right now in the 60s. This bag right here.
You don't have to.
Welcome to
Matrix Assassins.
Two real girls in a simulated world.
Welcome to another episode of Matrix Assassins. Andrew Latour is a true Matrix assassin in the red light therapy industry. An experienced chemical and materials engineer with Lean Six Sigma training, he is the founder and owner of Gemba Red. Always seeking and researching new health upgrades, Andrew was stumped by the light therapy industry. How could it be that the same thing that are ambiguous to our everyday lives, LED lights, suddenly cost so much money? After thorough searching, Andrew knew what he had to do. Thus, Gemba Red LLC was formed to provide customers reasonably priced LED devices that they can incorporate in their everyday lives. It is Andrew's vision that red and near infrared devices are a common household item used as often as we use a toothbrush. Andrew, thank you so much for stepping into the game with us this evening.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
To start us off, we'd just like you to tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey into red light therapy and the industry.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I kind of started off life kind of rough with a lot of respiratory illnesses, sinus infections, being overweight, obesity, asthma, you know, you name it. So, you know, I really didn't get into kind of the health aspect of things. I got into science and engineering, where they don't really teach you much of that, you know, in school. And, you know, started working in the workplace, but always felt like I was dragging, you know, much more than I could be. And then, you know, I kind of stumbled into a few things. My wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, introduced me to a far infrared healing device called the Biomat, which is like kind of a far infrared mat that you lay on and heats you up. And, you know, the far infrared rays we can talk about, it helps heat up your body and improve circulation and helps with pain and things like that. So, you know, I started out skeptical. I was like, you know, I can read some studies about this and check into it. Then I got into like the bulletproof diet, and I got really into like biohacking my health and getting to fitness and getting into, you know, really my diet, really overhauling that. But there was always this component of like still struggling with poor sleep and kind of poor energy during the day, even at work. So I was trying to figure that out, and it turned out, you know, a lot of those key components turned into kind of light based problems where, you know, you're getting too much blue light at night. So I started wearing blue blockers, and you can just get the cheap UVX orange goggles. And then getting more of the good, you know, the right kind of lights during the day. And then experimenting with different light therapies like red light bulbs and red light incandescent bulbs. And eventually I started going to some of these conferences where they were introducing some of the first red light panels that you see now are all over the market. But some of those first red light panels, I was like, you know, kind of skeptical. I was like, you know, why do they cost so much money? I was like, you know, and they're so overpuffed with all this extra marketing claims. And so I didn't buy at the time, you know, at these conferences where they were really hyped up, and I kind of held back, and I started investigating it more and more. And then, you know, kind of was like, frustrated, and a lot of people were frustrated with me. This was 4 years ago when there weren't really any options. Like now, if you go on Amazon or eBay or wherever, you can just Google it. There's dozens of companies, literally. But back when I started, I was maybe like the third or fourth panel company in existence. So it was a big deal when I launched and offered something that was more affordable, offered something that I had third-party data on day one, which wasn't even in existence with any of the other competitors. So I really offered something, not only, you know, people care about cost, but something a little bit more transparent and, you know, people could stand behind more of what I was doing in terms of education and telling people the truth, whether, you know, regardless if it helps my product or helps my sales or not, just to give people the truth and let people make their own decision.
Absolutely. I think if we also kind of go back and just for our listeners, like, how would you define red light therapy?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good one, because defining it is like the key of like what you're actually looking for. So red light therapy, you know, one of the first things to know is when we say red light therapy, we can also include kind of near infrared light. So it's a spectrum of kind of wavelengths that's usually between, you know, most of the time between 600 nanometers. That's, you know, the 600 range is the visible red. And then up to about 900 nanometers into the near infrared. That's, you know, the part of the spectrum that's infrared, so it's invisible, but it's very close to red. So it's not as much of a heating. So, and sometimes people debate about the wavelengths as well. You could go from 600 to, I think, 1070, and that, you know, that's kind of the range. And there's different names for it. There's photobiomodulation. The invention of red light therapy was, or kind of coining the discovery was a researcher when they first discovered the near-infrared lasers in the 1960s. They were testing out these lasers on rodents to see if it caused cancer. And, you know, you don't know what, it was brand new technology. So they're trying to see, okay, does this cause cancer? It's a common question now. And he found it didn't cause cancer. And the rodents that he treated not only didn't get cancer, but their hair where he shaved grew back faster. And they, you know, they had these kind of better healing properties. And so that was kind of the discovery of what was called low-level laser therapy. And the low level is very important too. So we talked about wavelengths. The low level is the intensity. So you don't want too much intensity. You know, you can see lasers used in medical devices for cutting and for changing kind of the skin. So we want obviously a low powered device that doesn't heat up your tissue, doesn't, you know, cut, burn you or ablate you. And so, you know, we know light can be really intense and you can use it for etching, you know, onto wood or onto metals. So the intensity range, you know, you don't want too little. So if you've got ambient light, just your generic light bulbs around your house, you know, and it's white light, that means it's got some red to it. You're not getting red light therapy from that because it's not enough intensity. It might have a few of the, you know, kind of beneficial wavelengths that we'll talk about, but it's not enough intensity. You're too far away from it. That's a common question is like, oh, I just got some ambient red light bulbs or I get some red light on my TV screen. But that's not a therapeutic amount. So you do need a certain amount of intensity. So it's the wavelengths and it's the intensity that really, you know, define the red light therapy. And then we can talk more about why it's special to the body as well. If you want me to start.
Yeah, definitely. I think that was one of our next questions about some of the key benefits of red light therapy. And then I guess explaining what photobiomodulation is, if that's just another interchangeable term for red light therapy.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, you know, photobiomodulation is a little bit more, they defined it relatively recently, but we, you know, we use it interchangeably when we're in this industry. But it's a little bit more of a definition to say we're studying, you know, if a study says we're doing photobiomodulation, it means a specific thing. It means that they're using non-thermal wavelengths of light, and it could be blue or green or whatever, but typically the most interesting is the red and the near infrared. And like I said, the non-thermal aspects, so you're not going to use a high power laser, you're not going to use a heat lamp, the incandescent lamps. And you're probably not going to use like sunlight or something, even though, like I said, there's overlapping wavelengths. You know, and the thing that makes this range of wavelengths special to the body, you know, we didn't just arbitrarily define a range of, you know, 600 and 900. That's the optical window of the skin, which is kind of a fancy way of saying some of that light of the red to near infrared can penetrate into the skin. And that's a unique property that blue light can't penetrate that deep. Green light, UV doesn't penetrate. And then as you go into the longer wavelengths past 1000, those are the far, you know, the mid and the far infrareds. Those are more the heating that will be absorbed into the water in the skin and heat you up. So that optical window is very special because the light penetrates through. And, you know, it could be, you know, some definitions say it's a couple millimeters. Some definitions say it's a couple centimeters. So there's some debate about that. But that's what makes it special. It can penetrate into the skin. And then once it's, you know, into some cells and into some tissue, one of the photoreceptors, it has to be absorbed into something, you know, relevant. So one of the major receptors is the cytochrome C oxidase in the mitochondria. And that's the kind of final enzyme in the electron transport chain in the respiratory process. So that helps, you know, kind of push that process along with, you know, providing it with some energy, and it dissociates nitric oxide. It helps produce more ATP, which is that's your energy currency of the cell. And then a bunch of other downstream effects, like some signaling reactive oxygen species, some ROS, and then all kinds of other downstream effects that are very beneficial. And so that's why once you understand that mechanism, it goes into your mitochondria, helps your mitochondria work better. There's also a competing theory that I like, is also that it gets into the interstitial parts of the mitochondria, and it gets into the water there, and it helps produce easy water, the exclusion zone water that Gerald Pollack has studied, and which is kind of a structured water that helps reduce the viscosity and helps with the ATP flow and with some of those molecules flowing in and out. The end result seems to be the same, whether you believe one mechanism or the other. It helps produce more ATP, helps produce, make the mitochondria run more efficiently. So that's why, you know, if you know about mitochondria and mitochondrial dysfunction and how our mitochondria seems to be at the center of a lot of chronic diseases with the body and chronic issues, that's why we see thousands of studies on red light therapy. Like I said, it could be called LLLT, the low-level laser therapy, or low-level light therapy, or photobiomodulation. There's thousands of studies on a huge range of benefits and ways it can be applied to the body for health benefits and for feeling better. So, once you understand it's that foundation, now it's not going to be as surprising when I tell you it's been used, you know, to study for brain health and different conditions of aging brains, traumas and PTSD, and also you know, a lot of different brain conditions, mood as well. It's been studied for wound healing. That's been a famous kind of study with kind of NASA. It's been studied for a lot of dentistry, for, you know, inflammation, for pain, for skin care, anti-aging, for effects on microbiome in positive ways. And sometimes when you can affect the microbiome, you get systemic effects back to the brain. So there's also some interesting studies where they aim red light therapy at the tibia, at your kind of shin bone, and that stimulates stem cell production and stem cell release, and it helps with your brain and with your heart and with these studies. So they call it systemic photobiomodulation or remote photobiomodulation. So you can aim it at one area and it helps another area. So you get these full body effects. And that's why, you know, it's a really incredible kind of healing modality.
I feel like when it comes to biohacking, there's so many different things that you can purchase. It's like, once you kind of get into that realm, you don't know where to start. And I really believe like this is top two. I think it's like cleaning up your water and having a red light therapy device. And I love that your goal is to make these things affordable so that everybody in their household can have one and see the benefits of red light therapy. I absolutely love mine. Before I had this, I just had like the red light bulb that you buy on Amazon. Totally different, right? Like we're not talking about, but it's just like that calming effect that you get with the red light. And so I just love mine. I keep mine on like all the time. I'm not like dosing with it, but all the time, because that would be not good. But okay, so I think this brings us to our next segment. Now that we have like the foundations, now that we've understood the benefits of red light therapy, I kind of want to talk about what makes Gemba Red, what sets Gemba Red apart from all of these other companies?
Sure, sure. I think, yeah, that's been, you know, we start, like I said, we started out at a lower price point than our competitors. That was great. We started out with high transparency with third-party data. We've still been doing that. And we have now a bigger, much bigger range, and I get still get third-party data on all my products. And, you know, that really helps, you know, with the dosing and with, like you kind of mentioned, if you leave your light on all day long, you know, you're not necessarily getting a dose if you keep it far away from you. And, you know, you're just kind of keeping it on as an ambient light. But when you get into the studies and you want to know how to dose something properly, it says, okay, this study says you need 4 joules per centimeter squared. You need to know the intensity of your product that, you know, at that certain distance, or, you know, or if you're going to use it close to the skin, and you need some, that needs to be accurate. And most of my competitors, especially when I started, they didn't have third-party data. They were using solar power meters, which was, you know, some junk you can find on Amazon. It's this toy that helps you kind of measure the sunlight and gives you an estimation of the sunlight. Like if you're installing solar power panels and you kind of want an estimation for how much energy it's going to produce, but it's really narrowly designed for one purpose. And it's got a lot of drawbacks if you try to measure a red light panel with it, because it's got a photodiode that's got sensitivity that really cranks up if you measure longer wavelengths like red and near infrared. So a lot of these companies started out, they still are doing it now. They're falsely claiming their intensity by 2 times the real amount, if not more. And so that is kind of a huge problem in my mind, you know, in terms of integrity for the industry. And if people actually want to take this seriously as, you know, kind of a medical device. You know, I have to not only provide the intensity measurements from my third party, but I also have done a lot of education about this problem and about this topic, and also to combat the fallacy that you don't need tons and tons of intensity, that more intensity isn't necessarily better. Like you alluded to, it could be a bad thing to dose yourself all day if you're in close proximity. There's a biphasic dose response, which basically means that too much, you get a diminishing return, and actually you kind of start to nullify your benefits. So, you know, there's a lot of nuance, and companies just want to throw out the nuance and just say, oh, get this huge panel and get all this intensity and everything will be fine. So, you know, I appreciate the nuance, and, you know, so one of the things I offer that's completely free is my blog and my, you know, YouTube channel and my Instagram, that really breaks down a lot of these topics. And I think it's helped a lot of people if they really want to know some of the truth, and all of it's really backed up with a lot of references to peer reviewed studies. So that's one of the huge things I offer, you know, is really free. And then with my products, A lot of my customers were asking me about EMFs and about flicker, especially, you know, back in the early days, a lot of people were really hardcore about this light therapy stuff, but they were still hesitant about LEDs because there's been a lot of hate against LEDs. There's too much blue light in them. There's too much flicker, too much EMFs, you know, all these problems. So everyone was told a couple of years ago, just throw out all your LEDs and revert back to incandescent bulbs.
Incandescent, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, there's some merit to that, but, you know, I've done a lot of of testing generic LED light bulbs, and I found a lot of really good ones that are low flicker and low EMF. And what, you know, I'm not sure if you've covered flicker or EMF in your, maybe you've covered EMF previously, but just EMF is a stress on the body. We're, you know, constantly bombarded with it, with our cell phones and with all our appliances and electrical devices. So, you know, it's a stress on the body, and, you know, generally you don't want your health devices to add to that load of EMFs.
Totally.
Stress. Yeah.
Let's talk about flicker for a second. I'm not familiar with flicker.
Yeah. So flicker is also another one, but flicker has probably more studies and better studies than EMFs, if you go into the PubMed, it's been very well defined. So flicker, we've got this alternating current power grid, right? So in the US, it's 60 hertz, and a lot of the other parts of the world, it's 50 hertz. And so that means our electricity has always got this oscillation to it. So even incandescent bulbs, even though they have a filament that's hot, it's constantly kind of warming and cooling with this alternating current. And that was never a big problem because it had this heat that it retained and it kind of buffered it out. So incandescent bulbs only flicker from like 5 to 13%. So there's kind of a percentage quantification, and then there's also a usually a frequency associated with the flicker. So with most bulbs that you get is 120 hertz. It's twice the AC. So the reason why people don't know about it is because it's invisible. This flicker from incandescent bulbs was always invisible, never really bothered anyone. It was so low. Then fluorescent bulbs came out and people started complaining about them at workplaces and at, if you're at an office or whatever, you're like, man, I'm getting headaches. I'm feeling drained. I'm feeling fatigued. Part of it, that was the spectrum of the fluorescent because of the blue light. And the other part was because they flickered a lot more than incandescent. So they've had a very high amount of flicker, and that was part of the distress people were feeling. And televisions also, the early cathode ray tube televisions had a lot of flicker to them too. And they could cause seizures in children. So there have been studies, not just studies, huge reports of people getting seizures from their televisions while watching like cartoons. Like one of the famous incidents was a Pokemon TV show in Japan in the 90s that over 800 kids were taken to the hospital for a seizure because there's a combination of, these flashing colors on the screen because the animation of blue and red kind of oscillating combined with how the TV kind of flickers and rasters with the old style. So that actually initiated a lot of studies on flicker safety and how to create media that's safe for people to consume without too much flashing lights and that would distress them. So you can still see some news where I think some influencer posted some flickering image to promote themselves and a lot of people complained about it. So then we get to LEDs. LEDs are, when they first came to market, were even worse with flicker, even more distress. They could flicker at nearly 100% because they're such a fast, they're just a semiconductor. So there's no buffer and they just go 100% and they're horrible. And I've traveled the world. I've been to different parts of the world where they've just implemented LED streetlights and all this stuff. And it really affects me. I know it affects other people. Even if it's invisible, you still get what's called a stroboscopic effect, which means if things are moving like you're driving, and there's objects moving, then you get this kind of like phantom kind of strobe like effect. Even if it's flickering at 120 hertz, you still get that effect, and it can be dangerous if you're driving or you're operating heavy machinery with rotating equipment. So there are real problems and real consequences, and kids that suffer from anxiety or different mood disorders. When they're in a classroom under fluorescent lights, they would advise those kids to sit closer to the window because the window and the sunlight helps buffer out the flicker. A lot of these have issues have been going on for a long time. And only recently, there's more and more standards that say, hey, we got to get flicker out of lighting, get it out of your screens, get it out of this. You'll start to see, if you Google search low flicker computer monitors, low flicker lighting. It's a stress, that can enter into your eyes, mm-hmm. even if it's invisible to your eyes and your brain. Your brain's still kind of struggling to kind of keep up and stitch that image together. And it becomes a problem, especially if you're trying to read or do any kind of task under a flickering light. So that was a big problem, even with the red light therapy industry. A lot of companies were just not knowing about flicker or not knowing about EMFs, and they just would sell whatever they could find. And it's cheaper to make something high flicker because you use less components. Basically, you can eliminate flicker in LEDs by using basically an AC to DC driver, which converts the AC to DC, which is direct current. So we know, you know, we can really smooth out that flicker. So anyway, that's kind of what I've had on my product line all along, despite, you know, all this kind of fake debate that flicker doesn't affect people. But, you know, I've always educated this, and it seems like, you know, nowadays it's getting more competitive. Companies are offering lower flicker products because they have heard back from their customers that there's been a problem, or they just prefer that, you know, extra layer of safety. So yes, I think the flicker is very interesting. It's something that's always bothered me. And, you know, I think that's part of the quality control of my products. I don't put out anything that would adversely affect myself. And I tend to be very sensitive to flicker and EMFs and different issues. So maybe that's kind of what makes me so diligent. And, you know, I'm constantly trying to solve my own problems in terms of sleep and health and things like that. So mm-hmm. red light therapy has always been there for me as a big component of that.
Yeah, I really appreciate that because I feel like I'm the same way. I've always been really sensitive to office lighting and just sometimes even like the street lights, that sort of disorientation effect that you get from it. It's definitely something that's concerning. But I wanted to go back to the EMF real quick. Is it true that red light therapy actually helps mitigate some of the effects of the EMFs that we have in our environment? I think I had heard that at one point.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a complicated, people kind of try to, oh, I'm connecting the dots here for you, folks.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, you can say, okay, you know, if you've got a good quality product that's low flicker and low EMF, you're getting the red and near infrared light. Maybe it's producing easy water. It's charging your cells. And you know, it's up strengthening your cells, strengthening your mitochondria. So anything you can do to make your mitochondria work better, you're protecting yourself from, you know, things like EMFs and things, you know, other kind of environmental hazards. So, I've never seen any kind of direct connection like that, but you know, you could really, you know, make an argument to say, yeah, you got to do everything. You got to stack the cards in your favor. You know, if red light therapy helps, if far infrared can help as well, produce that easy water. But it's not a direct threat. But
that makes complete sense. And then one other thing too, talking about the dosing. So is it true that you don't need like a full red light panel in order to get the benefit of red light therapy? Is it based on personal preference? Like you mentioned, some companies have like these crazy setups where you have like five panels,
massive. It takes up like a whole wall, and then you can like attach them and create like a mega panel.
Well, yeah. And then that's the, you know, then that's kind of the Western mindset, the gimmick of more is better and bigger is better. And it's always bigger in Texas, whatever. We can take a step back and look at the origin of low level laser therapy. That origin is using lasers. And if you've used the laser, you've had these little pen lasers, you've had whatever it is, it's a very small spot size. And that's the origin of this entire industry, that they were using lasers. I would still say most of the studies, the thousands of studies, like I said, have been done with lasers. And it's only relatively recently that LEDs became more affordable and more available, that now the clinical studies are starting to do more with LEDs, also because LEDs are safer. You can't really, you know, blind yourself with a LED the way you could with a laser. So it's safer for at home kind of product usage. But, you know, I always try to bring people back to reality that, okay, we start out with lasers, so we can do a lot with a targeted treatment, whether it's, okay, you know, if you got a small LED panel, something that's handheld, or small, you know, sometimes they're little clusters of diodes, and you can, you know, target your issue, whatever your issue is. Is it an area of pain or area inflammation, or you're trying to improve your thyroid or know, sometimes I treat my lower back or knee or whatever it is. So you don't need a giant panel if you've just got like a targeted issue. So that's kind of the first practical aspect.
What if you have a lot of targeted issues?
Right. What there? Well, that's when you start.
That's when you need the mega panel.
Yeah, that's when you start to say, okay, my whole body hurts. Well, I gotta get just a big panel. That's fine.
Throw me under.
So I was reading just now is a new study. It was a protocol for a study, so they haven't done it yet. But it was for full body photobiomodulation for fibromyalgia. So, you know, I think it's very interesting if you've got a full body, if you got full body pain, if you got, you know, maybe like a lot of people say, like they have Lyme disease, mm-hmm. some big kind of full body mitochondrial dysfunction, and any other, you know, thing that I think is practical to use full body red light therapy for is for athletic recovery. Because if you're doing big workouts for big muscle groups, you know, you can pop in a full body red light therapy and increase that. That's where, and I was reading this protocol, and they were only referencing one other study that was done on athletes, and they didn't really have a conclusive result. It was probably too small of a study. But there's what I have a blog about is there's only 6 peer-reviewed studies on full-body red light therapy. So that's 6 out of 6,000 studies. So, you know, a lot of times companies will say it, make all these claims, but they're really cherry picking, and a lot of times they're cherry picking laser studies to promote their giant full body panels. So I always end up kind of down talking people. I'm like, do you really need a bit, you know, because I've kind of started adding more larger panels just because people ask me for it. And then, you know, I give people what they want. So, you know, so there's, yeah, different contexts for, okay, really think through. And then a big panel, you know, you've got, it takes up a lot of space on a wall, or do you hang it on a door and then it's flapping around on a door? And then you have to kind of move towards it, you know, and it's in mm-hmm. a fixed position and you got to go stand in front of it. Or some people kind of pull up a chair and sit in front of it. And, you know, you only have to do that 10 to 20 minutes a day. You know, but still sometimes it's kind of an issue. But if yeah. you've got some of the smaller panels, like I really promote, even the Beacon is really lightweight. Okay, I'm going to bring it and put it on my office table and aim it at my face, and I can work and have some light therapy on my face, which helps boost my energy levels and my mood and helps with my skin. And then maybe I take it to the couch and I've got like a lightweight panel that I use on me while, you know, you're just relaxing, you can read, you can watch TV. So that's why I usually prefer, you know, kind of the lightweight panels, having something that's more flexible and that you bring to where you're at rather than you going out of your way and standing in front of a wall.
I brought mine to the podcast. I just
right. took so it you over, can just,
yeah. carried it over right here, propped it up. Yeah.
Right.
And for those are listening, I have the Beacon, and so does Nicole.
Theater, yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of my newer products that is even lower EMF. It's, I would say, is one of the lowest EMF panels on the market in its kind of size, because, you know, when you get to that size, companies are including fans, which fans are noisy. And you know, I already mm-hmm. have tinnitus, so I don't need extra noises in my brain. So, and that one also, the power adapter you see is external to the panel by a couple of feet. And so that panel is truly super low EMF, super low flicker, because it's a really high quality adapter. So it's really, you know, an impressive panel. And I think more companies should be looking at that kind of design as opposed to, oh, we need all this power, so we need all these cooling mm-hmm. fans and we need these high powered power adapters inside, and they're kind of be like just this big bomb of EMF. But and then they say, you know, and, you know, I'm not the only one trying to kind of fearmonger this thing. They all have a statement of say, hey, make sure you stand at least 6 inches away from our panel because it's got too high EMF. And they don't really leave. They don't really tell you that last part of the sentence. They just say, oh, just stand 6 inches away and you'll be fine. But that originated from all these panels being inherently high EMF. They couldn't do anything about it unless they ripped the guts out. So then it's, oh, we'll just stand 6 inches away and you'll be fine. It's negligible after 6 inches away. And so everyone thinks that's some clinically magical distance to be. But most studies actually use skin contact where they're pressing the laser or the diodes into the skin, because there's some reflection losses of the skin. Maybe about 60% of the skin reflects both red and near infrared, even though infrared's invisible, it's still reflective. And some people think, oh, near infrared has so much better penetration, but still pretty similar to red. But, you know, so we need to kind of really get really practical with how we design these products, and we can, and I've demonstrated that. So part of my products are also, even if you don't buy from my product, you can appreciate the engineering and the thought and the care that went into it, and say, wow, you know, this is the direction. Hopefully, you know, more and more people want to go, as opposed to these big, giant, clunky things that are, you know, inherently higher EMF.
Yeah. And I like how you mentioned that the last thing when you're trying to improve your health is to have to worry about, is your health device actually harming you?
Yeah. Yeah. And I get a lot of pushback for that mentality. And it's not really my mentality of, like, you know, most people, you know, they ask me, Andrew, I want a low EMF product. No one's ever asked me for a high EMF product. But, you know, then some of these companies, they'll say, oh, well, you know, do you use a cell phone? Do you use a hair dryer? Do you use, you know, Wi-Fi? And they, I mean, what your lifestyle is not my business. So, like, totally. If you ask me a question about my products, I'll tell you if it's, you know, what the EMFs is and what I've done about it. And I'm not going to get into your business and tell you, oh, well, you know, you get more EMFs from your phone. Why, you know, unless you throw out your phone, I'm not going to reduce the EMFs in my product. And, like, that's, like, really presumptuous way of treating people, you know?
Yeah, or just classic deflection. Like, don't worry about mine because, like, all these other devices are wrought with it, you know?
Right. And it's, like, I think that's a really tough mindset. And I've just, you know, it is what it is. Like, if you've got high EMF or low EMF, you know, you know, I try to show the measurements of my products as well on some of my YouTubes, or at least in the product description, because it's also a subjective statement to say, oh, is it low EMF? Is it no EMF? And a lot of companies started saying they're no EMF, which is, like, almost physically impossible. So it's kind of like there's no definition. There's no formal definition. There's no certifying, you know, certification that says, okay, here's a number, and that's technically low EMF. So anyone can say low EMF. So that's the other thing of, like, look for companies that can actually show it to you. I try to do a lot of YouTube videos that show you the measurements, or show you, at least show you the pictures, because everyone's saying low EMF and they're all kind of saying the same script. And they're, you know, they half the companies barely even know what they're saying at this point, because they don't know what is EMF and how is it generated. They just say what everyone else is saying. So we can get, you know, into some problematic areas where companies are just saying, oh yeah, we're low EMF, don't worry about it, stay 6 inches away. But yeah, we're, you know, I think people have the right to know what frequencies. If you believe that red and near infrared light and, you know, these wavelengths, and, you know, they've got frequencies to them, if that affects your body, that starts to open your mind and starts to open the door to say, oh yeah, you know, EMFs can affect your body. There are therapeutic applications of EMFs, like PEMF. If you've heard of, maybe a couple brands are like AmpCoil and Beamer, where you purposely pulse some magnetic fields onto people. And that's been studied for brain health as well. That's been studied for bone healing, because it can penetrate through and get to the bone. So, you know, there's a biphasic dose to PEMF as well. And if you're living in a lifestyle of lots of EMF, then you get the same problem. So, you know, you get this kind of chronic stress response.
So real quick, back to the concept of, you know, like, everything's bigger in Texas type mentality, are more wavelengths better? So, like, going above four different wavelengths, is it better to have, like, five or six, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, and I'd say the popular panels that started, you know, 4 years ago, like the Juves and like whatever, all the Juve knockoffs, were they were two wavelength, right? They wanted to represent the red with the 660, and they wanted to represent near infrared with the 850. So, you know, and so LEDs, the thing to know about them is that they're quasi monochromatic, which means they're you say, okay, it's 660 nanometers, but actually there's a small distribution around 660. So usually 660 might describe the peak or the middle of that wavelength range, and then it's kind of like tails off on each end. So you get a range technically from an LED. If I say 660, you get plus or minus like 15 nanometers. So that's the first thing to know about wavelength. So because like, okay, you know, I'm selling a 660, but someone says, oh, I really wish you had a 670 nanometer. And, you know, I could say, well, you know, you're still getting some 670, you know, it's close enough. And also the biological mechanisms are close enough that your body's not going to be too discerning about, is it 660 or 670? So we need to, you know, we haven't really defined what's the distinguishing factor of how many, you know, nanometers away do you say, okay, yeah, this is a different response. And, you know, there have been some studies to try to figure that out. I was just listening to a podcast with Dr. Hamblin, interviewed by Dr. Mercola from a couple of years ago. And Hamblin is a, you know, massive researcher. You'll see his name on a lot of publications if you go into PubMed. He said they don't really find a big biological difference between the reds and the near infrareds, as long as you're in this 600 range, and usually the mid to low 800s, you don't really find a huge benefit. You would need to like have a really big study and really like look at some of the fine details to say, what's the difference? Because I found one study, I think it was on muscle recovery, that compared like 660 to 830, and they found no significant difference. They both had a benefit. So anyway, then the question is, well, how many wavelengths, you know, it's like, okay, you know, we get back to the laser and we can stay a little grounded and we say, okay, lasers are truly monochromatic. They only, so if you could say a laser's got 650, that's a common one, or 660 or the 633, that's like pretty much just one wavelength. That's all. Coming from a laser, and most of the studies were a single wavelength, so you can do a lot of good with just a single wavelength. So, you know, a lot, and then it just kind of started to tumble that, okay, we're doing two wavelengths. My first product was three wavelengths. It had 630, 660, and 850. And then I got into four wavelengths, where 630, 660, 830, and 850. So then I got four wavelengths, and now I just launched, or no, I'm going to launch it next week, is the overclock panel with five wavelengths. So again, you kind of hit it with the tone of your question. You don't necessarily need five wavelengths. You don't necessarily need four, three, two. Technically, you should only need one, you know, to get where you're going. But you know, it doesn't seem to hurt to add more wavelengths. There's some people have speculated there's a synergy of, you know, especially at least trying to represent red and near infrared. But, you know, there's always going to be kind of some debate about that. But seems like right now, you know, people want more wavelengths, maybe because you kind of get more of a spectrum, you know, kind of like the sun, where the sun, you know, is all the, you know, kind of all the wavelengths. So some people want kind of a more natural kind of concept. So the more wavelengths, kind of the better, as long as you represent the important ones. So, yeah, I think, you know, it doesn't hurt to add more. Some people will prefer red over near infrared for a few different indications. If they're concerned about, some people are concerned about near infrared and damaging the eyes, which, again, it's all intensity dependent. It's dose dependent. If you have a low intensity product that's been you know, properly made and properly measured, you won't damage your eyes, even with near infrared. Some people say it gets absorbed by your eyes and can be causing cataracts, but that's only been shown, again, in very high intensities or in scenarios where there's also heat involved. So like glass blowers, there you can, you know, look up what's called a glass blower cataract. So if you have a workplace, you know,
right, and you're there like, you know, like 8 to 10 hours a day or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was for some reason I saw on Netflix some sort of glass blower competition where they're, you know, making these nice bowls and it was, you know, to make the nicest thing. None of them were wearing eye protection. Like one or two of them were wearing sunglasses, which sunglasses do not block infrared. So I'm like, even on Netflix, there's no like OSHA.
There's no OSHA on Netflix.
Yeah. I was like, what are they doing? I was like, apparently, you know, you can have
the wild, wild west out there.
Yeah. It's like crazy. Oh my gosh, so anyway, so I was like, I should write in. I'd be like, have you heard about the glass? if you work in a foundry or a glass blower area or a bakery, you know, you should think about how that heat affects your eyes. And the heat is coming along with some infrared or some near infrared wavelengths as well. And so you can look up, people send me studies all the time. Oh, this study says infrared causes cataracts. I'm like, no, did you read the context? Like, did you read the scenario? And I found a really cool study that used high intensity near infrared on a rabbit. Or was it? Yeah. But they kept the eye cool somehow, and they didn't cause any cataracts because they kept the eye cool. So it's all about just not too much intensity. I would say the max for your eyes, you know, you don't really want too much more than 30 milliwatts per centimeter squared. But the sunlight gives us maybe 40 to 45 milliwatts per centimeter squared in that red to near infrared range. So, and, you know, we have eyelids and eyelashes and eyeballs that are slightly sunken in. So we have some protection from the sun. We're not supposed to stare at the sun. So, you know, one of the common things is just to look off to the side of the panel or look above your panel or wherever. Just don't, you know, you don't have to stare into the LEDs. That's even assuming if the intensity is too high. So anyway, back to that. So infrared, some people say, and then there's also more fear about, does it harm the testicles? There was a couple of studies that used the high powered laser on rodent testicles, and they showed they caused damage with the near infrared laser. And I've just thought that was kind of cruel. I was like, well, yeah. You know, I think that seemed like the point of the study. Yeah. Okay. But that doesn't mean, you know, on a full size human and you've got just LEDs and a responsible amount of intensity, it's not going to cause too much heating. It's not going to cause that damage. And, you know, a lot of people want to do it because they've heard some influencers say, oh, it boosts your testosterone and boosts it all the way. You know, and it seemed like, you know, like Ben Greenfield was featured in like Men's Health magazine for this thing a couple of years ago. And again, it really helped get a lot of traction for the industry. But I think he was doing a lot of other stuff like weightlifting and all these other hacks. So I think, you know, it's a complementary modality. There's totally. Not a lot of hard science on like, oh, it's going to boost your testosterone. But if it helps with your workout recovery and it helps with your sleep, or if it helps with this and that, all things that help with testosterone building anyway, and you want to aim it at your junk, then you can do that too. You know, so you can, and you get some circulation and blood flow benefits as well. That's usually what I get people thanking me for. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, you can take some moderation and say, yeah, this is all part of my strategy to improve my health. And if you want to say, oh, it's for my thyroid health, I'm going to aim it at my thyroid, or it's for my testosterone, or it's this or that, whatever your motivation is, you're going to start using red light therapy and you're going to start feeling better, maybe have more energy, maybe a little less pain or inflammation, and helps your quality of life. And it's kind of like a self kind of gratifying cycle that hopefully can break a lot of people out of their indoor lifestyle that's been deprived of red and near infrared light for many years. And so that's why a lot of times it feels like, wow, this is really something, because, you know, we've just been deprived of it. It's like, if you give someone deprived of vitamin C, if they've got scurvy and you give them some vitamin C, they're like, oh my God, it's a miracle. And, you know, that was back when,
you know, the pirates, they didn't know about it.
Go ahead.
Oh, you know that clip when, like, Cinderella, she, like, transforms and she's like, ah, that's kind of how I feel. Like, when I turn this on, I do this in the morning, and I just automatically just feel like it's nourishing my cells. Like, it does feel like this whole deep sense of well-being and nourishment in the morning. I love it.
Yeah. No, I mean, and that's not even a direct photobiomodulation thing. That's, like, just, like, the bright light, you know, if you go out in the sunlight, like a lot of people say, get out in the sun in the morning. Mm-hmm. You know, if that's not available, then use a bright red light therapy panel, especially on your face. And it gives you that alertness and it gives you that stimulation. And you say, wow, you know, I feel a little bit better. I can, you know, roll out of bed a little easier knowing I have this little boost. And you don't have to be maybe as dependent on coffee or things to get you through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask that too, because what I noticed right away was that it felt like so I wouldn't have to remind myself to use it. My body would almost crave it. I don't know if you've heard that from, you know, other users of red light therapy.
Yeah, I think that's a very common thing of, like, once you start using it, you kind of crave, you want to go out of your way and say, oh, you know, if it's, especially if it's like the first thing in the morning to get that boost, or some people really rely on it at night. There's kind of a dual effect that maybe it helps relax them at night. And, you know, using red light for the mood, or using red light sometimes on the chest can help with the melatonin production. And so, yeah, people really crave it. They build kind of a habit around it, which is great because it helps build that kind of compliance to get the benefits. You know, it's not something like, it's such a slog, I have to chug a couple pills every morning and you don't really feel much out of it. It's like usually something, you know, there's some benefits like, okay, you know, hair growth or wrinkle reduction or some of these benefits, or, you know, maybe if you're, you know, have like a chronic condition, those will take a lot longer to start to feel a benefit, or, you know, you take before and after pictures. And so some of those things will be very, very subtle. But, you know, like you said, some of the kind of just kind of mood boost and waking you up and feeling good, those should be pretty immediate benefits and maybe even sleep a little bit better at night. Those should be a little bit more immediate results that you can start to feel and say, yeah, this is the right thing. You know, this is the right thing to do.
So for some of the more chronic conditions, I know there's such a variety of different ones, but I guess, like, what is the longer term that people should be aware of as far as, like, how long they should try to stick with it before they might notice some of those effects?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, you know, it's, yeah, there's different levels of chronic diseases and issues. Some people for, you know, if they've got a really kind of a chronic pain, and you don't know, you know, a lot of times you don't know the underlying cause, like, you know, it could take a few weeks and you should start at least to feel, okay, maybe I'm feeling some marginal benefit. You know, like I said, with the wrinkle reduction, that could be a couple months, you know, especially if you take make sure you take a really good before picture and take an after picture, because it'll be so subtle throughout a few months. You might not notice it right away. So some of the skincare things, some of the red light helmets that you see that help with hair growth, they say at least like 6 months, but maybe even over a year, to really start to see some new follicles or see some new thickness. So, there's definitely a big range of what, you know, how to manage your expectations and how do you quantify it? Are you going to do a blood test for your testosterone before and after? And what, you know, what's your regimen going to look like? But yeah, so some of the things will be immediate. Some of them you got to give it a little bit more time.
Do you mind if I ask what your regimen looks like? Like, what is your routine with your red light?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always changing it. I'm usually changing it based on whatever new product I'm testing out or whatever I'm trying to develop. But, you know, a lot of times in the morning, I try to do a red light. I've got a vitamin D lamp, so
how cool.
So I've got my Spurtzy lamp. That's the brand name. Next to my like beacon panel, and then I'll have both of those beaming on me in the morning.
Oh my God, you don't need the sun.
You have your artificial sun.
I've got so many lights. Yeah. Sometimes I turn on a couple extra white lights. I've got a bright green light as well. And so I'll just be in a room that's just bathed in light. You know, especially if it's cloudy that day or whatever. If the sun's out, then I'll go stand on my porch and get a little bit of sun. Even if it's cold outside, try to get some sun, try to ground a little. So that's a key thing. And then, you know, maybe during the day I'll have, maybe a small light, like a red light, like my vector panel on my desk. And I'll do that intermittently just to give me a little boost if I'm like working on my computer, if I'm not outside during the day. And then at night, I'll try to do some more, like maybe on my forehead. I seem to like doing red light therapy on my forehead I've got my handheld kind of spacer light, or I've got a couple of DIY lights that I wrote an instructables on how to make, that basically you can get it almost pretty much pre-assembled on LED supply. But just search for like high intensity torch light on instructables. And then I'll do some, a little bit on my forehead. I'll do a small panel on my chest, like I said, for the melatonin production. And then maybe I'll do, even during the day or before, I try to do my lower back, try to target, you know, usually I have some tightness in my lower back and seem, you know, there's some studies that it helps with like the kidneys and with the adrenals. So you can hit all that with like a Gemba Red Groove or a Gemba Red Rex panel to cover all the lower back while you're sitting at a desk or sitting at a couch. I'm really kind of all over the gamut of whatever lights I have available.
Love it. Okay, so for our listeners, how do I put this? I feel like I'm just so thankful that I have Nicole, my co-host, because she is like so research-based. We kind of reverse engineered this podcast. So she was looking into a red light therapy device and was doing all of this thorough data. And for me, it's like so overwhelming. I'm like, just give me the bullet points and we'll go from there. And so when she found Gemba Red and she found you, I was like, dang. And so we're extremely excited to have you on. And I think for our listeners, like, what are some things that when they're shopping for a red light, the top three things they need to be aware of?
Yeah, I think that's good. So, I'd say a few top things are, kind of the obvious ones would be the right wavelengths and the right intensity. And maybe, you know, that's usually pretty straightforward. You can't really mess up the wavelengths too bad, no matter who you buy from. But I have found a couple on Amazon that sell you the wrong wavelength. But even if they sell you the wrong wavelength, you might still get benefits. So I don't know. I'm not trying to be like, I'm the only one that does it right, but I am the only one that does it right. So, get someone with the right intensity measurements. A big red flag is any number over 100 milliwatts per centimeter squared, especially at 6 inches away. So if they say, they use the greater than symbol, I don't know why, greater than 100 milliwatts per centimeter squared at 6 inches away. What does that greater than even mean? Like, it could be anything. So Juve does this notoriously because they actually don't want to disclose the intensity anymore, which we should be suspicious of. And then everyone else just kind of follows the same thing where they all say, we're 100, we're 120, we're 150, we're 200, literally. But you can find them all. But first off, that's not a real number. And second off, that's not even a desirable number to have for for red light therapy. Like I said, those numbers would rapidly heat your tissue. I've got a study with Dr. Hamblin that says you really don't want to go above 50 milliwatts per centimeter squared. After that, you do start to get more and more heating of the tissue. Even like they literally say, a limitation is 100 milliwatts per centimeter squared, and you get some bad results of overheating the tissue and causing some collagen breakdown or whatever it is on the skin. So anyone who's science-minded would say those numbers, you know, like I said, you don't need too much intensity. So that's the big kind of red flag. And then a lot of companies are kind of dancing around it. Like I said, maybe they'll be really vague about the intensity. Maybe they'll be, say some kind of funky kind of wording of like, well, we're kind of lying about the intensity, but only because everyone else is lying. You know, just absolute madness. So unfortunately, look for someone who's, you know, giving you reasonable, realistic numbers, you know, hopefully measured right. You can email me if you want to check my lab reports. But anyway, so, you know, doing the right thing, not trying to oversell like, oh, we've got this, like you said, this modular panel that, oh, you know what? One panel's not even enough. You need six of them and they all snap together and you, you know, you hook them up to an app and, you know, and this, the panel's going to be larger than your body anyway. So what are you even aiming it at this point? So, you know, someone who's a little bit more practical with the information they're giving, someone who's transparent about Flickr and EMFs. I get my Flickr third party measured and it's always like super low. It's like 1%. But some companies will say, oh, we're no Flickr. And again, there's it's kind of like, well, that's not really a real statement either, because how do they measure no Flickr? And you can get zero Flickr on some cheap Flickr meters, but that means you just got a cheap Flickr meter. Same thing with EMFs. I've just got some cheap EMF meter and that's why it loses the sensitivity. So if they say they're no Flickr or no EMF, that's another red flag that probably doesn't even exist. If you've got sensitive enough measurement equipment, you can always measure something, some low level, even if, you know, it's trace amounts. So, you know, look for transparency on Flickr and EMF. And, you know, it's someone that's a little bit more practical about it and not really overselling it and not, you know, trying to get every influencer on the market. That's just all repeating the same thing.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So, you know, and again, you can, you know, despite all the misinformation, you can get benefits with any, you know, most panels on the market. So there's really I'm not trying to say they're not effective. I'm just saying, you know, we need to spend our dollars with some integrity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of say, hey, I want to support companies that are telling the truth and doing the right thing and not buying into some of these overhyped kind of concepts. So hopefully, you know, and I, you know, kind of present, you know, a different range of products. So a lot of people upsell themselves and think they need a giant panel. But when you really sit down and say, hey, when am I going to do this red light therapy? Where am I going to do it? What parts of my body do I need to cover? And that should help narrow you to say, you know, maybe you can use something that's smaller, that's more manageable. And you don't always have to treat every spot of your body on the same day. You can rotate things around. So, you know, that's why I offer such a big range of kind of different sizes of panels.
And what are your thoughts on the companies that claim that they have FDA approval or some component with FDA in it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well. So, yeah, there are several companies. I've named them before, but
Juve,
and Platinum LED, and I have records of this, so it doesn't matter if they come after me.
Yeah, you got the receipts.
So they've written and advertised that they were FDA approved. Juve was notorious for this. This was when they first launched their Generation 2 panels. They thought they were I think they literally thought they were FDA approved.
You just think that
will it into existence?
Because they don't like they don't even know the process of this you know the FDA process. So they thought they were FDA approved, but they were really just FDA registered. So there's three different categories. There's FDA registered, there's FDA cleared, and then there's FDA approved. Mm-hmm. So and kind of in that order of you know what's you know, more meaningful. So if you're FDA approved, that means they're approving of your specific claims or protocol with your device. And so that's a meaningful thing. Usually you have to show some clinical evidence that you produce some results. FDA cleared is more of like, you've proven it's kind of safe for your intended use, not necessarily it's super effective. And then FDA registered is just like, we filed some paperwork and paid a filing fee. And, you know, I mean, so there's barely any oversight. And even they, you know, they tried to imply like, oh yeah, our FDA's come down to the facility and really inspected our processes. The FDA won't audit you unless you've done something horrendously wrong. So hopefully they haven't gone to these companies' properties, but most companies, a lot of companies have gotten FDA registered, and whether they understand if the difference between registered and approved.
It's like just like filling out the application.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you fill out some paperwork, you say, right. Oh, you know, we're safe, we're equivalent. So basically I'm not FDA anything because I don't want to support the FDA unless I absolutely have to.
Yeah.
So that's the other side of it. It was like these guys from Juve, they were like, oh, we come from Covidian and the medical industry, and that's what makes us really high integrity. I'm like, what? No, it doesn't. Because, and they did the same tactics of using influencers like doctors and pushing their products through them. And they also tried to patent all their products, to monopolize their products, just like the medical industry tries to patent all their drugs. So there's really, yeah. So anyway, so we don't want to go that route if we don't have to. The FDA has a guidance on low risk general wellness products that came out maybe 5 or so years ago, basically saying if you got a low risk product, it's just for promoting general wellness. You're not, you know, I'm very restricted on what kind of medical claims I can make. But really, you can't hurt yourself with the LED device, especially with red and near infrared light. And so there's no requirement for registration at this time. So, and even some, you know, a company that understands this is called V-Light, and they make the devices for the brain, like the ones you insert in your nose, and then a few like the headsets that you know, targets the diodes on your brain. And as last I checked, they weren't FDA anything either. So I would, you know, I'm going to follow what they're doing because they seem like they know what they're doing. And if they get registered, then I'll know I should get registered. But until then, there's not a big requirement. As long as we're doing, you know, again, if companies are crossing the line and making all these medical claims and they're doing this and that, the FDA will crack down on this industry, and it's going to be bad news for me and for everyone else. So I'm not trying to, you know, shame on my competitors. I would just appreciate they don't call down the thunder from the FDA, and I'll be, you know, an innocent bystander that gets in the crossfire. So I try to be, you know, very cautious with the claims I do. I try to be responsible with what I'm doing. And, you know, we're only asking for trouble if we, you know, we think we can cross the line and make all these claims that we can't do. So, a lot of people say, oh, I want something FDA approved. But you're not going to get it from a red light panel company. Mm-hmm. There are a couple FDA approved. I think like, you know, some of the skincare products are FDA approved, like I want to say like maybe Omnilux and Lightstim and, you know, a couple of the skincare products, they are FDA approved. There are a few indications that have been FDA approved, like anti-wrinkle, anti-acne, things like that. So, you know, but as far as I know, there's not a lot of panels that are actually going that extra mile, and they don't need to. But if you want to make a specific claim, even like just something that seems mundane, like, oh, you know, it reduces wrinkles or reduces inflammation, those could be FDA regulated claims. So you have to watch out. And that's where you can start to see some more red flags of like companies listing out all these benefits, but their product wasn't specifically, first off, tested for that. And they're definitely not approved for making those claims. There's also a separation. You can't just have one clinical study. Even if you do have one study, that doesn't mean you're approved for that indication. Mm-hmm. So we got to learn some of these basics of how to market things properly and to be very science-based and very methodical with how we're learning about this industry and introducing it to the public. Because we want to establish credibility and say, hey, we're going to be science-based. We're not just going to jump to conclusions and make all these claims like we're snake oil salesmen. There's definitely a process to do this the right way.
Yeah, I just looked down. My cat Pusheen is obsessed with the red light therapy, and he's never with me when I podcast, but now he's chilling in here with me because of the red light.
Yeah, he loves to bask. Pets really love it. There's a huge market for veterinary care of using lasers and LED products and pads for pets. So you can search. And it's the same technology, but sometimes they make it a little bit more convenient for pets or kind of add some coverage so you don't get hair into it. But there's a huge market for pets, and a lot of pets seem to be very drawn to red light therapy.
So one of my last questions, I just wanted to ask you if you've heard of Alex Fergus. Because I've seen he does a lot of reviews, and I just kind of wondered like what your thoughts were on him, because it seemed like he does kind of like in-depth crazy like scales of like top, you know, like different components. So I didn't know if you kind of were familiar with some of that.
Yeah, of course. I wrote an article for him on entirely on Flickr, because he wanted a guest blog on covering Flickr, and he knew I already knew a lot on the topic. So he's done a couple big reviews, big comparison reviews, and he did a big one in 2019, and I didn't even have a panel because I wasn't making body panels at the time. And then he did another one recently, a couple of months ago. And yeah, he goes through, you know, just look at some of those criteria that he looks at. You know, it's universal to any product that you want to find. Price is number one. Mm-hmm. You know, for most people, you know, you can say, oh, you know, I don't care about price and I don't care how much I spend. And, and then that's another fallacy. If we're picking on Juve purposely makes their product so expensive that it seems people literally make up stories in their head of like, well, it has to be higher quality or it has to be better. Or some person said like, on Facebook was like, oh yeah, they're FDA approved, so that's why they're so expensive. I was like, you should check their website again, because they're not FDA approved. So the price doesn't always indicate quality, right? But he goes through price, he goes through wavelengths, he goes through intensity, the noise level of the panels, which, you know, if you've got a built-in fan, the noise is could be a problem.
Yours is silent.
Yeah.
Mine is zero. The beacon at least has no fan. My two big body lights do have fans. This is kind of unavoidable when you get that big. But again, you use kind of like a, you know, kind of a lower noise fan, but some panels you can get off of Alibaba. I've heard them. They're ripping. It's like you're in a little wind tunnel. I was like, you know, and you're trying to like chill or meditate.
You're trying to like meditate. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I like, I'm really pushing to get, you know, more and more panels that are zero fans. It doesn't disturb you. You can meditate. It's perfectly quiet. I think it's such a different, like you'll never, like if you go visit someone that has a panel with a fan, you'll be like, oh, this is like, why is this blaring at me? But he measures the decibels because you can measure that pretty easily. So he measures the decibels, which is good. He measures flicker. He measures EMF. Then he goes into some of the if companies have accessories, if they have apps or control schemes or, you know, this and that. I keep my panels pretty basic, so I don't get any points in those categories.
Yeah, like some of it's like if they have a cool, like, I don't know, like the settings where you can either like increase or decrease or like depending on off buttons. And it's kind of like at that point, you're like, well, now are we like losing the focus of what we're doing? You know, if it's getting all fancy.
There's so many, everyone's trying to get more and more features and gimmicks and, you know, there's a little bit of merit to it, but sometimes it's like, well, I don't want a Swiss Army knife. I just want a thing that just does one purpose of the red light therapy. I don't want to get distracted with all these extra features and this and that. And the real value should just be delivering that therapy. But, you know, there's, you know, maybe some innovation. Some companies are trying to introduce pulsing. We didn't talk about that. Pulsing is kind of a rapid on off of, you know, of the light. And, you know, originally why it was used a lot in the studies was to give your tissue some time to cool between the pulses. So they found they could use higher peak intensity lasers but then pulse it. And that could actually kind of, in a way, increase their penetration without too much tissue heating. So it was kind of balancing the heating aspects. And you can get a little bit into different frequencies might have different brainwave associated with it, like 10 hertz is alpha and 40 hertz is gamma. So you can get a couple different, you know, frequencies, and those have been shown to be beneficial for, especially for different brain diseases like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, where there might be some dysregulation for how, you know, the brain waves are working, and you kind of force like a frequency into your brain and you can say, okay, maybe you get some benefit from that. So there, you know, there's a little bit of like a mechanism of like, is there something if we pulse it at just the right frequency? You know, there's calcium ion channels and different things that you can pulse and maybe manipulate it. We're definitely not there in terms of the studies. Most of the practical use for pulsing is the heat, which, like I said, most responsible panels should not be causing too much heat anyway. So it's kind of like the cyclical thing of like, well, why are you adding pulsing? Well, it's got all these extra benefits. Like, and again, they haven't been clinically proven it with their specific device and their specific context, but they'll be very happy to show you a study about some laser from one study that they cherry picked to say, oh yeah, my panel offers the same benefit as this laser study. And like, well, no, that's a completely different context. So, you know, companies are trying to innovate. So yeah, we've got pulsing, we've got, you already asked about multiple wavelengths. Maybe, you know, Juve added kind of an ambient light mode to their panel. I'm not sure how, you know, practical that is. I've done a lot of, you know, kind of posts about finding just generic red light bulbs, you know, because you want to use red light preferably at night to help with your circadian rhythm, because we know white lights, which contain blue, can keep you kind of awake and stimulated. So, you know, I noticed early on a lot of people were just leaving their panels on at night as their ambient light. And, you know, I was like, well, that's kind of an expensive kind of ambient light to have. So, you know, I started making a few night lights. I make a red book light. And then I show people you can get some pretty good red light bulbs from TCP or Sunlight brand and, you know, get some ambient red lights, and you don't need to kind of build it into a panel. But some people use it anyway as an ambient light. That's kind of a nice dual purpose for red light panels. But so, you know, there's innovation, but yeah, at some point we were going to hit a wall. Like I already think we hit a wall with companies going too far with too much intensity. And then at some point, you know, I think we need to I would push more for designs that are more affordable, obviously, and then designs that are more convenient for the user to use, you know, something
like a suit. Know,
yeah.
I just want to put on a red light suit.
Yeah.
Strap up, baby. All targeted areas. Let's go.
I see, like, you see those people in the LED suits doing like the TikTok videos.
Yeah,
I was that's like, me. What if you just reverse that suit?
And then reverse.
Yeah, totally.
Just turn it inside out.
Okay, so we're about to wrap up. So we have two quick questions to ask you before closing out. And so one of the last questions is, you know, after our listeners have listened to all of this high level discussion about red light therapy, why should they go out and buy one?
If you've got any aspect of your life that you're trying to improve, whether it's sleep, whether it's kind of some pain or inflammation, whether it's anti-aging, anti-wrinkle, maybe promote your thyroid health, promote your hair growth, promote your even as like a kind of a first aid. So you don't want to wait until you hurt yourself to have it, but it's kind of like a good first aid for wounds and for recovery from surgeries. It's good as we didn't talk about a photo preventative for UV light. So you use it in the mornings and it helps your cells kind of prepare for UV light. So if you're, you know, trying to recover from a sunburn or trying to prevent a sunburn, those have been studied as well as benefits. So it's really such a wide range. And then again, with you can use it in concert with your circadian rhythm, with your sleep, with getting a burst of energy in the morning. So it's really, I think
you can utilize it for so many things.
Yeah. I think most people are surprised that like once you could have just one of those things and get started with it. And then you're like, wow, this is like, you know, totally. This is something I want. And like I said, whether you get an immediate result for one thing, or if you're, you know, looking for a long-term benefit, I think the sky's the limit. And I think even for athletic recovery, that's a big one. People go into the gym, they want to work out harder and recover faster. That's all been studied out. That's a huge part of the literature is with athletic recovery. So you're just trying to improve yourself. There are a few studies for weight loss, but I haven't been super convinced about that. I think, you know, the sky's the limit. It's really such a foundational part. It's almost, you got to think of it more of a, like just a nutrient that we've just been deprived of. And it's something we got to bring back and appreciate this light that we've evolved to have from the sun. And now we're living this indoor lifestyle. How do we get more of it?
I love that. Yeah, it truly is like the ultimate up level for your health in so many different aspects. Okay, for sure. Are you ready for our last question?
I guess so. Yeah.
Okay. What is one song that penetrates your soul like an infrared laser?
A song?
Yes.
Oh, wow. You got me. Good. I was not ready, actually. I'm sorry. I would say the first thing that's coming to mind is Black Hole Sun.
Oh, I love that. I love that song.
I love Black Hole Sun. Mm-hmm. And I would sing this song. I did a lot of commuting. I'd be singing it in my car. I'd be rocking out to it. Like,
love it.
Love that song. Like, it hits me so hard every time. Like, this is my jam.
I like that. Yeah. So we ask each of our guests what their, you know, what song penetrates their soul. And we have a Spotify playlist where we compile all the responses. So that's the reason it seems random at the end, but it's kind of like a little side project.
Yeah. I'd love to see it.
Yeah. So, we'll have it in our show notes. And also one other one we normally ask too is where can our listeners find you?
Oh yeah. Yeah. GembaRed.com. You find the whole website, see all the products, get to the blog and scroll through the blog and see if there's anything that interests you there, everything from dosing to looking for different products I test out different products that I don't even sell for tips on controlling your light environment with white lights or red lights or blue blockers. So a lot of great tips on there, a lot of diving into the science of red light therapy. And then, you can connect with me on Instagram. I'm pretty active on Instagram. Email me, gemberred@gmail.com, so you can find my email address, you know, on the website or through social media. And I'm pretty good at replying to emails. Find me on YouTube. I've done a bunch of YouTube videos, again, reviewing things, talking about a few of the basics, all under the same name, Gemberred. So, yeah, find me on whatever platform that suits you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Andrew. We really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Level complete. Hit subscribe, like, and leave a review for future simulations. Till next time.